Hey, Fish Tank family, let's keep it real. Debt can hit hard and it doesn't care who you are, but you don't have to face it alone. I've seen people struggle and I've seen what a second chance can do.
That's facts, Juice. And when it comes to getting folks out from under it, nobody does it better than Van Horn Law Group. Chad and his team don't just talk the talk. They show up and fight for people when they need it most.
Yeah, I've known Chad Van Horn for over a decade. He's a good friend. And more importantly, I've seen firsthand the real results he and his team deliver for people all over Florida. Bankruptcy, debt relief, whatever it takes to help you breathe again.
Over 10,000 people have gotten a fresh start thanks to Van Horn Law Group. No judgment, just real solutions.
Yeah, so if debt is holding you back, call Van Horn Law Group at 954-637-0000 or visit vanhornlawgroup.com for a free consultation.
And if you mention the Fish Tank, they'll even cover the cost of pulling your credit report so you know exactly where you stand.
That's right. Don't wait. Take control and get back in the game with Van Horn Law Group.
Hey, Fish Tank listeners, Alvaro Freitas here, CEO of Casabella Design Group and host of the Renovation Revolution podcast. Look, every great football team needs a quarterback, someone who reads the field, calls the play, and leads the drive. That's what I do on your renovation, from kickoff to the final whistle. Whether you're dreaming about a bathroom upgrade, building that bonus room for your just one more week brother-in-law, or teaching you how not to be that pain in the ass client, we cover it all. This is an HGTV flop. It's real talk from a contractor who's been in the dust, the drama, and the demo. So grab a cold brew or un cafecito if that's more of your vibe and join me for the renovation revolution wherever you get this podcast. Follow the show and I'll see you in the huddle.
You're now diving into the Fish Tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Trap OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dog fans, number one. One, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank.
Woo. And welcome back to the Fish Tank live stream. I am the legendary Savak, standing in place temporarily of Seth Levitt. He will join us later, joined as always by the best hands in the podcast business, OJ McDuffie. Juice, how you doing, man?
Man, Savak, you look like you're sitting in place. You said standing in place, man. It looks to me you're still in your garage sitting in place, man. So, I mean, you got to get that right for me first and foremost, right? But I'm doing good, man. I'm good, man. I got some of my favorite people on tonight with us, man. And, you know, you'll introduce the rest. I mean, one dude, he's all right. You know what I mean? He's a new dad. He's all right kind of dude. But, yeah, man, I'm excited about tonight. You know, I missed last week, Savak. That's, you know, right. I mean, I was stuck in airports all weekend long, pretty much, and it wasn't TSA issue. It was like weather and everything else. TSA guys that were there, they were amazing, man. So, big ups to them. But the rest of it, man, was a shit show.
See, I know I missed the bell on that
already.
One.
Already one ding.
They got me wearing too many hats.
I got a lot of dings. I got 10 dings, Bo. I got 10 dings. Go ahead. Finish your introduction so I can talk to who I want to talk to, man.
Right. Also here representing is the namesake of the Van Horn Law Group, Chad Van Horn. Chad, welcome in.
Thank you. I actually got dressed up in my Dolphins colors for you guys. So, like, this is a big deal right here, you know.
Like
so,
I would hope so.
Well, the only reason I did it was because there was somebody bigger than me on the podcast today, so I need to just show a little bit of respect, even though he might still punch me in the mouth eventually, but I'll leave that to him.
Chad was, of course, alluding to our extra special guest, Kim Bocamper. How you doing, Bo?
I'm doing good. You guys can hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You hear us? Beautiful. Can you hear us, Bo?
I think you guys have been talking shit about me while I haven't been on, so if I need to know anything to defend myself, now's the time to bring it up.
Bo, I got you. I'm gonna tell you, because I'm a rat. I'm a rat bastard, Bo. I'm gonna tell you exactly who said it. It was all of these guys. All of them said something, Bo.
What did I say? I gotta say, I disagree. See, now Chad was saying stuff. I wouldn't dare. See, I shook your hand at the poker tournament. I saw how big you still are. Yeah, no. No, sir. I'm not running my mouth.
All right. Well, I think I got it working now, so I'm not going to touch anything.
So real quick.
I'll deal with you guys. I'll deal with you when I see you in person. I'll deal with you individually.
That's right, Bo. Hey, Savak, I can't believe you went straight snitch, man.
Huh?
I can't believe you mess with OJ. I won't mess with him.
I know he's happy to hear that. What were you saying, Juice? Tell me.
I was saying, Savak, that you went straight snitch. Straight snitch. I tried to put us all involved. You know what I mean? When it really wasn't all of us. It really was just Chad. But you went straight snitch to Bo about who was talking trash, man.
No,
he wasn't talking trash necessarily. He wasn't talking trash. He was talking about the technology part of it all.
I tell you, I'm having some problems. I can't hear.
And I was accurate. So y'all.
Are you going to talk?
I can't even say nothing.
You couldn't hear us there, Bo?
Yeah, for a second I couldn't. I'm back.
Okay. All right. All right. So let's run, man. Let's go. Let's get it going.
Let's ride.
In there, I don't know if you guys heard those comments recently by our recently departed. I made it sound like the man passed away. Our recently excused quarterback Tua. He was talking on the Atlanta presser. Had a curious comment. I'm going to quote it for you guys. He said, when asked about the experience playing last year and how everything that was going on affected his play last year, he said, I don't want to get too much in depth with things that were going on, more so in terms of players to coaches than it was players to players, but it was unique in a sense. It was unique. So I guess let me throw it to you first, Bo. What do you make of
it? It was unique because he played like shit. Is that what, that's why it was unique?
Right.
You know, and he'd stand up after every game and try to dig himself out of the hole. Or, you know, it seemed like every time he stepped behind a mic, he put his foot in his mouth, and it just kept going on and on and on and on. And, you know, it's
you know, go ahead, Bo.
I would say we got what we paid for, but we got far less than that.
Tell the truth.
You're in a safe space, Bo.
It's disturbing. It really is disturbing.
Yeah.
You know, I seemed to watch him last year, and I don't think physically he was in that good a shape. I think mentally he was. I think he just lost his confidence, and then then he finger pointed guys, and I was in on some of those post game shows and watching him trying to dig out of the mess, especially up in Cleveland. That was the end of it for me. I'd had enough of that watching that and trying to watching a guy play as poorly as he played and still kind of shove it off on other people. And he would kind of give you a quasi, well, you know, it's on me, but
it
always turned out to be something else, but
it did.
So I wish him well. I wish him well, you know, but when he's stealing $200 million from us, he's only stealing $1.3 from Atlanta.
Right.
That was the butt. See, that was the butt.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, and Bo, you're so right. You're so right about all this. This is a team that gave him an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, as a fifth overall pick, when some people were saying we were crazy, and at times we weren't, at times we were, and then at times we are again now crazy about the situation. You know, with a guy that came in that's a little banged up, but then he goes out like you talk about, Bo. This gentleman had zero accountability or zero ability to read the room when it comes to your position as the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. You know what I mean? There's so much that comes along with it that he just didn't get it. And I know probably, you know, I don't know how he was treated when he played in high school. It's probably pretty good because he's a damn good player. And of course, Alabama, you think that he's with a guy like Nick Saban, and you wonder, you know, how he treated him. But, you know, and I know some coaches always have a totem pole of who's higher or lower in the totem pole. I get all that stuff. But for him to, first of all, come in and then have a problem right away almost with with Coach Flores and all this. This dude is he has no ability to read the room because he never seemed like he never learned it. And I don't know why he never learned that part of it. Because part of us being professional football players and Chad, you as an attorney, as reading the room is important. It really is. And learning how to give answers without giving too many answers, you know, or learning what it sounds, excuse my French, Savak, but fucking ridiculous. You know what I mean?
Attitude.
Continue. Oh, yeah. He's done with the Dolphins with on the microphone, what we saw for the last few years from him. And it starts off already in Atlanta. And I wish Atlanta good luck with it because it's going to be interesting if there's a battle between the two quarterbacks, which they're saying might be. And, you know, and then maybe Tua's got more reps because something might happen to Penix. Knocks on wood, that doesn't happen because I don't wish it on anybody. But, damn, I'm looking forward to some sound bites and some press conferences from Tua Tagovailoa now that he's away from us. And see if it sounds as weird to us when he's with them as it sounded crazy for us when he's with us. You know what I mean? It was crazy. Mm-hmm. And now his play was the biggest problem at the end, but his mouth really kind of sealed the deal, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
But Juice, I think you nailed it where he's not a Flores quarterback and he's not a McDaniels quarterback. So who is he a quarterback for if you're not a quarterback for one of those two coaches? Because I think they're both brilliant coaches and very different.
Correct.
And he didn't work for either of them. So maybe he is. Hopefully he's a backup quarterback. We'll see where it goes. But if you're not a Flores quarterback and you're not a McDaniels quarterback, I don't know what kind of quarterback you are.
I guess he's going to find out.
Uh-oh. Yep. He's a Seth Levitt quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me finish that while Seth gets settled in right there.
Please.
But, you know, he's got to be a team quarterback is what he's got to be, man. You know what I mean? He's got to be those are the guys. And Bo will tell you this, man. The quarterback is hopefully the leader in your locker room, or at least one of the leaders in your locker room, because that's the most important position in sports. So the fact that I don't think that many of those guys had enough respect and whatever for Tua at the end of the day, and I'm just speculating, that's what it seems like, you know, because, you know, if you don't have respect for your quarterback in the football locker room, that's a big problem, man. You know, and, you know, the players galvanize around a quarterback. They do. And they pay attention to everything they're doing and saying. And they do pay attention. You know, it's hard to pay attention, not to pay attention to it, but the money they make, but how they talk about it. We don't know anything in terms of what is being said in that locker room. But at the same time, though, I feel like when it comes to, you know, with Tua, I think that the guys in the locker room are the ones that really might have decided his fate in Miami, not only his contract, not only his injuries, not all the way he talks. There are a lot of things that could have played into that.
Keep going, Deuce.
I'll bring him on. You know, I'll keep it going. All right. All right.
The new host. Who needs Seth when we got Juice?
No, I'm not. I'm an analyst. I'm not a host.
Just ask iHeart. They told me that real quick. I'm an
analyst. So, Juice, So there's a couple of things that since Tua got here that's been that kind of some things that I felt that I saw leading up to it. From the time he got here, first of all, he's had a hard time. He's had a hard time playing in weather, rain, cold, and especially when it's rainy. When the field is wet, when it's damp in the stadium, he just fumbles the ball around too much. I mean, he doesn't get good control of the ball, and he's kind of fumbling around, and he doesn't seem to throw with authority in those situations. So, and controlling the ball, and the other thing is, and this may be just me nitpicking, but Juice, you know, I sit in the sideline. I get down on the sidelines. I'm down there 3 hours early, and I'm sitting there watching. And all I do is I sit there and look out in the field and watch what guys are doing. And I look at the other quarterbacks, and they come out, and they're throwing to their receivers, and You know, they're running there, you know, the receivers are running routes and they're throwing to his receivers. And never once did I see Tua come out before a game. Never once did I see him come out before a game and throw to his receivers. He would come out with Darren Bevell and they would walk without a ball. They would walk through the motions of ball handling, handing the ball off and this and that, while these other quarterbacks are down throwing at their receivers that they're going to throw to, you know, in the game. But from the time he got here till the time he left, I never saw him do that one time. And you know, there's a lot of people that if they're listening to this, they're probably sick of me saying this. But so one of the things is, you know, up in Buffalo, Buffalo is one of the last stadiums that has a crown on it, right?
Right.
And you would think your quarterback would want to come out and throw to your receivers because, and you know this, OJ, if you're on a crown field like that and you're running an O-cut, there could be a good yard difference between the height of the ball and where you're at.
Yes.
On that crown.
Yes.
And so not to come out on a field like that has that kind of, I at least a field like that, he would come out and do that. And so it just, that always perplexed me and always made me feel, you know, kind of uncomfortable about him. You know, he talked about having relationships with his receivers, with Tyreek and with Waddle. But I don't know how you can have those relationships when you're not, you know, you're in the locker room while those guys are out catching footballs from, you know, your backup quarterbacks and guys that they're not going to be throwing to them. I just, you know, that to me is one of those things I couldn't wrap my head around.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That, see, and Bo, you know what the best thing about this is, Bo, is that, you know what, you knew that about Tua and you didn't say anything to anybody about it, man. You know what I mean? And now we can talk about how, you know, everybody wants to say that Tua was this or that. Tua was not doing things the proper ways, man, yeah. And in terms of some things that we're talking about here. But, you know, when you're talking about going out there with your receivers ahead of time, especially on a foreign field, it should be a routine. I think every field, man, because no matter what, if you're at home, you're away, you're in the snow, you're on a crown field, weather and everything changes everything. So that warm-up, those passes before a game, are critical. And I wonder, here's my thing though, Bo, why did that not happen? Why did Tua not want to go do it? Did the receivers not want to go do it? We don't know who didn't want to go out there and get that early work in that a lot of teams, and like you talk about quarterbacks you've seen on the other side of the field that do it, oh, you know, every single game and I've seen, we do it. We always did that.
Yeah.
I don't get how it's not going on these days.
You know, I remember watching when Peyton Manning was playing up with the Colts. I'd sit out there and do the same thing what I was doing. And Peyton would come out early in the game and he'd bring out whether it was Marshall Faulk or Marvin Harrison, his receivers, and he would go through trouble drills. Like he would line them up, everyone get lined up, he'd call a play, and then all of a sudden he's going, I'm rushed. And you would see these guys would go to spots, you know, where he was in trouble. If someone was rushing him, if someone was pressuring him, they would know that go to these spots, and he knew exactly where they were because they worked on it every time I saw him. They did it every time I saw him play. They did the same thing over and over and over again. And those guys all came out together, all talked together, and I saw none of that communication pregame. The receivers coach should have been there saying something. The quarterback coach should have been saying there's something instead of standing there walking down the field by himself with the quarterback coach, nobody else, doing ball handling drills without even having a football in your hand, which I was always, I'm just sitting there scratching my head. That's probably why I don't have much hair anymore. Scratch my head so long for trying to figure out
what this is. All bad, Bo. I mean, you know.
Come on, man. Here. Let's go, Bo.
And Kim,
it's odd. It's really odd. And now the stuff, like you said, he's talking about, and I don't know.
But can you tell a guy that you're? Can you tell a guy that's
getting in trouble again?
Oh, can you tell a guy that's getting $50 million a year and has the guaranteed contract what to do? I think that was that's the real problem is you gave him that guaranteed deal, right? And then he felt confident in doing things the way he wanted to do it.
Bo, are you hearing Chad?
No, I'm not. I'm having troubles here. I can't hear Chad.
Well, at least it's not personal, Chad. At least it's not personal.
I saw
the way this thing started, I was watching on the ride over here.
I saw that bottle of wine he hoisted up there.
Oh, man. Too funny.
Go, go ahead, Seth.
I'm not going to touch the Tua thing because it might just happen to make its way into my I tried to tell y'all. Mm-hmm. However, what I did want to ask you guys about, and hopefully you didn't discuss this already, did anybody see what Adam Schefter said about the Dolphins today on his podcast? Or maybe it was yesterday on his podcast. But he talked about what Tua has left in his mm-hmm. wake is obviously close to $100 million, or whatever his dead cap number is. Yes. And then the Dolphins have this historically high dead cap number, 170-something million in dead cap money in a, the cap, thank goodness the cap went up, right? The 305 or 308 million, whatever it was, but more than half is taken up by guys that are going to be playing for other teams this year. Okay. So everybody in the league should be sending Stephen Ross, holiday cards this December. But what Adam Schefter talked about was that there are currently 43 players on the Miami Dolphins roster mm-hmm. that are signed to minimum wage contracts. Now, I know we've talked about the cap troubles and what have you, but think about that, 43 players. You can only carry 53 on your roster once the season starts. 43 players, and they won't all make the team, that are minimum wage contracts that we've never seen anything in the history of the league that you talk about no middle class, right? that's what the Dolphins are looking at and that they're going to try to do something that's never been done before. What do you guys like?
If I'm not incorrect, most of them are 1 year deals, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're trying to like get through this year and survive. I love that Chad. Can we just talk about Chad muting his mic when Bo can't fucking hear him anyway? But he's got his mic muted. Sorry.
I talked shit earlier. Ding. So I'm gonna mute myself.
You guys hear him muted on his end?
Yeah, we hear him, Bo. We hear him.
Well.
Too good. But that's just, I hear now the Moneyball Dolphins, we're hearing that, right? The Moneyball deal, like the old A's team. And I think that's baseball, right, Juice?
That's baseball. That's correct.
Yeah. It's just these guys had to know what they were walking into. Schefter did recognize the fact that John Eric Sullivan and Jeff Hafley probably have a longer runway than most first-year head coach and GMs that in this historic season where we've had, I think there were 10 or 11 new head coaching hires, that there's a little bit of a longer runway. And we've heard that before, right? Brian Flores allegedly had a longer runway, and then things fell apart in the way that they did. But these guys had to walk in and say, look, I'm the right guy for you, but you have a shit storm that you're asking me to clean up.
Well, I think what they're trying to do is clean it up.
Yeah.
Get all these guys, because we've been for a decade or more, we've been having guys, we've been going, well, let's get this guy that's got maybe 2 years left on him and give him, a $15 million contract and see and this and that. And so I think these guys want to, they want to strip it down to the bones, strip it down to the bare bones and do what they said they were going to do when they were hired, both Sullivan and Hafley again, they started saying that we're going to build from the inside out. We're going to build from the line of scrimmage out, we want to get young guys, drafted guys, get as much draft capital as we can and develop our own young guys. Because if you get those guys on that rookie contract, you can go 4 or 5 years with those guys, really like 3 or 4 at least, till you have to pay up on them and build your team that way. And I think that's what they're going to do. And now look, there's a lot of guys left on this football team that are young guys. We had 3 guys drafted in the 3 defensive tackles drafted last year in the draft. We have a guard that's a new guy. that you know he's got to get better this year, certainly. But I think that's the base right now that they want to get, and they just want to flush everything out and get the guys that they want under the contracts that they want to have them under, so they can build the way that they want to build. And there's really no other way to go about doing it than it, you know, you might as well do it right now when nobody's expecting anything in this football team going in next year. You might as well expect it now or do it now and be ready to load up the following year. But you can't go down two tracks at one time. And I think these guys have chosen their track and they're going to live or die by this track right now.
Juice, what does that locker room look like? If you know, let's just say, I don't know, 43 guys, let's say 20 something guys make the team that are on minimum deals. So you've been the, I'm not going to do what I normally do to you, Juice, but you've been the rookie who's trying to make the squad and impress the veterans. And then you've been the veteran guy, the team captain, the star player, you know, all of that. And you and Bo have both been in that situation. Just obviously the money started to change right when you played, Juice, and now it's just ridiculous. But if you've got three or four guys that are making real, you know, Malik Willis, who seems like a great guy, is going to be making $20-something million, even though that's now average to below average for a starting quarterback, still $20-something million a year. And then you're going to have a bunch of guys on minimum deals. What do you think that dynamic's going to be in the locker room, and how much does Halfley have to manage that?
Let me tell you, Big Seth, that happened in my career. What we're talking about right here.
Really?
You know, if you think about it, when we let Don Shula go and we hired Jimmy Johnson, that was the thing that he did almost right away. There were only a few guys on that roster that were able to maintain and stay on board. Of course, Dan Marino being one, and I was lucky enough to be another one, but they got rid of a lot of veterans, a lot of veteran money, a lot of all that stuff that was built up to win championships. Didn't work out because our guys get older and the situation wasn't getting any better, that they got young. Jimmy Johnson made us young back in the day. You know what I mean?
30-year anniversary of that season, Juice.
Yeah, he made us young back in the day. And that's what we have to do right now, because the cap money, the age of our players, Jimmy wanted to really come in and change a culture, which he kind of did. We had a strong locker room. I think Jimmy tried to be the leader of the locker room, but that's a whole different story. But I thought our locker room was really strong. But I think the fact that, you know, when he came in, a lot of guys had to show and prove, and he got rid of a lot of guys. And that's kind of how it's going on today. I think they do it a lot nicer today than they did it back in our day, Bo. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I think that they really had to really trim the fat because of the situation they were in, you know, financially with the salary cap. But also the culture in the locker room wasn't – they did some research and they wanted to know – and I'm not saying that these are the guys they got rid of that were issues in the locker room, but a lot of guys they got rid of, I heard through another – no. I think there were a lot of issues in the locker room from the guys we got rid of.
Well, yeah, look, I think a little bit of that goes to Tua, but some of it, you know, another amount of good deal had to go on Mike McDaniel. I mean, you know, that was a guy that they brought in, you know, he's an offensive savant, you know, whatever. And it worked for a while, but, you know, like you see, Raheem Mostert, who was as close to Mike as any player that he's had in the league, probably. When he gets out, he said, you know, he wasn't a tough enough coach. He just wasn't a coach of – he wasn't a leader of men, you know. And I think that was all – I think you could all see that. If you kind of paid attention, you could kind of see that. And I think that was a lot of the reasons why this team didn't perform the way they did. And then you had the Tua situation. And I think those two situations in particular are what made this team and what shaped this team – and shape this locker room inside and out. Because I think 2 years ago when Tua got signed, he was kind of crowned the king of that locker room. He was the man, and he was the guy everyone was looking at. And you got it. You're the number one guy. And let's see what happens. And So between the combination of Tua and him in the locker room, it went sideways. And it went sideways pretty fast.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, what's crazy about locker rooms, guys, is that, you know, usually the leaders are coined the ones with that play the most prolific positions and make the most money, you know? And when you choose your leaders that way, sometimes that can be a problem because they might not be good leaders, you know? And I think that no matter what, I mean, whoever the captain, we've seen some of the captains that were named. And let's be honest, we all looked at some of the times the captains were named before the season started. And we're like, how the hell is that person a captain? You know, because we know a lot of backstories and things like that. And we've had that situation with this football team where, you know, you name leaders or you name captains. Captains are supposed to be leaders. But damn, you look at it, Bo, and you know this. The leaders need to be the best leaders, not the ones that are making the most money or playing the most prolific positions.
Well, so sometimes the guys you listen to most aren't the captains. They're just guys that are doing their job and have a lot of respect. Now, you talk about captains. So, I mean, they had six captains. How many captains do you need, OJ?
That was one of my favorite,
you know,
paper rants. You went off on that. Eight captains. So, remember, Travis tried to tell us, Travis Wingfield there were 17 to 18 guys that could be captains.
So I remember going out to Indianapolis the first day at Indianapolis, and they had just named the six captains, you know, during that week. And so I'm looking out and I'm going, okay, which of those three captains are going to walk out? I mean, how do you decide that? And they sent out three guys that weren't captains at all. They sent the two, they sent the long snapper and the punter and the kicker out. I go, what the hell is that? You got six fucking captains and you're sending three other guys out there. What's the hell about?
Ding. Come on, Savak.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. All right. I've seen a lot of other shows are doing their 7-round mock drafts. And I mean, there's nothing I hate more than a 7-round mock draft, but I get it. We're not going to do that. However, we did have something here that's relevant to our area. The Miami Hurricanes just had their pro day, and the Miami Hurricanes had one of the best seasons that they've had at that university in a long, long time. There are a lot of players, a lot of good football players are going to get jobs in the National Football League, but the stars of the show were two pretty good guys that are really, really well coached in my opinion. But let's talk about Reuben Bain, right? And Akeem Ezidor, you're the fiercest pass rush probably in college football this year, Juice. Is that fair to say? I mean, I know, you know, collectively,
yeah.
Those two guys.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Coming from those positions as well. That's absolutely destructive.
Yeah, absolutely. Destructive is a great word for it. And one in Bain that, you know, at one point people were saying, hey, he could be the number one pick overall in the draft. And they started measuring his arms, Chad. But, you know, you're probably talking about a guy who's top 10. Maybe he leaks down into that 11 spot where the Dolphins are. I've seen some mock drafts say as low as 12 or 13. And then Mezidor is later in the first round. And so the Dolphins have 11, the Dolphins have 30, the Dolphins have like one pass rusher on the roster, I think one. And, you know, Chop Robinson, and there's some of these 43 guys are in that position as well. The Dolphins need an edge rusher for sure. And it wouldn't, I don't think anybody, they need a lot of things. I don't think anybody would have an issue if they selected one of those two guys with one of those two picks. And there's a chance one of them may be available at one of those two spots. What do you guys think about that Hurricanes pass rush? And what do you think about the Dolphins potentially drafting one of those guys? Let's start with you, Bo, because I know you watched.
I like both those guys. And you know, I know Reuben Bain, you know, it's got 30-inch arms or 30. I saw it was 30 3/4 inches, you know, that.
I think they remeasured him, yeah.
That quarter of an inch is really going to make a big difference with this, you know. But all I know is I watched – look, I saw that guy play at Miami Central. I saw him play, you know, at the University of Miami. And he's a disruptor. I don't care where you – and, you know, if you want to talk about his arms, his arm length, and it's become a – you know, the pass rushing, you know, game now is about, you know, slapping hands and slapping arms down and all this kind of stuff. I don't think that's much of an issue as a, you know, with that type of game that they play rushing now. But if not, you could. He's. I think he's a guy you can move inside, have him play inside, and he would disrupt. You know, he had what do you have? I think he had what 9 sacks, maybe 6 sacks. I don't know what it was. 9.5 sacks this year. I think I think 30 yeah. during his whole career in Miami. Like that. But anyway, so but that doesn't count the sacks that went the other way, where he was getting pressure from. Because he was on both sides, they'd switch him both. Most Mesnor and him, they would switch sides, so he didn't know who was coming. But you know, Bane is pushing guys out, Mesnor's picking up the sack, and vice versa. So both those guys. But I would be look if he's there at 11, I would snatch either one of those guys up at 11 because they do need another pass rusher. I mean, a few more.
You would take Mesnor at 11, though?
I think they've signed three. I think they've signed three. Edge rushers, free agent edge rushers, and a couple of them look like they may be able to play. But I think if you find a premium guy, so if Reuben Bain's there at 11, do I take him? Yes, I do.
Oh, you got to take Reuben Bane at 11.
Yeah.
I don't know about Mesnor at 11. That might be.
You know what? I don't think to me, and I'm gonna, so to me, he's not far behind Reuben Bane because I watched his production the way. And look, the other thing too, Seth, and you know, this is something I know that you know. They were coached as a professional. They're coached like a professional pass rusher.
No doubt.
Jason Tengel, Hall of Famer, coaching those guys. And I tell you, he gave them a lot of good lessons and a lot of good stuff that's going to keep them being very, very good at the next level. And so maybe there's a pass rusher that played in Nebraska. I'm just pulling guys out. He's not going to have been coached the way that those two guys have been coached at the art of rushing the passer, and I think you say that around
an argument for me.
Okay, wait, hold on. I'm done with the UM recruiting tape we're doing right here. All right, any defensive lineman that wants to come in, I'm done with the recruiting tape.
They'll drop one of those.
We're not talking. Talk about my running backs, Big Seth. What's that?
They can drop one of those three cards with 3-star rushers and give them up to you at Penn State.
We'll take them, Bo. We're not greedy. We're needy. I'm going to tell you that right now. I'm going to tell you this. We're going to stop this recruiting tape, Bo and Big Seth, for UM. And yeah, we know Jason's great. We know he's got him pro ready and everything, but we ain't doing no recruiting tape right now.
I just thought it was interesting that you've got guys that could fall to either one of those positions.
Yeah. What Penn Staters can fall, Big Seth? Can we talk about a Penn Stater that can fall?
they fell. They already fell.
Oh, now I'm out.
Don't go out.
I wanted to ask him a question.
Hey, tell him.
Chad, it's normally Chad who runs OJ out with that.
I was just going to give him credit for watching that. I was watching the NCAA wrestling title, and then Penn State they rolled over everybody there. So
way to team up.
Maybe you should put some of those guys on your football team.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, I'm just saying, 5-time straight national champion, 13 out of the last 15 years, you know what I mean, doing it big like we always do it. We broke another record on points this last weekend with 4 or 5 national champions, as well as 8 All-Americans. You know, most schools get our way with 2 or 3 of them. We got like 8 or 9. That's how we roll with Penn State.
That was pretty impressive. That's been pretty impressive, Juice.
Man, it's. I mean, before we get into a Big Seth, it really was, man. I mean, this our coach, Kale Sanderson, man, he's just an incredible, incredible wrestling individual. For one, he went 159-0 in college and international wrestling, when he was, you know, as an amateur. So he dominated that. Then he was a great coach at Iowa State, and then he came to Penn State. And since he's been at Penn State, we've won, like I said, like Bo talked about, and appreciate the tee up, Bo. We won 13 national championships in the last 17 years. You know, so national championships come through Penn State now. We are the Alabama of the Nick Saban era. We are, you know, the what's his name out in L.A., UCLA?
John Wooden.
John Wooden, you damn right we are, Big Seth. I want D.C. that's how we roll, man, in wrestling. We need to get there in football, but that's how we are in wrestling.
Chad, your thoughts on Penn State wrestling?
I got a lot of thoughts. And I just Kim, can you hear me first off before I get into my thoughts?
I don't think so.
He still can't. So I can just keep talking shit.
You could. I don't know if you'll get that nice seat at Catch a Cut if you talk shit about Bo. But
yeah.
I can't hear what he's saying, so I can't answer.
All right. That is so strange that you can't hear one person.
And the defense rests.
I'm out. I wonder if it's like, you know how they say there's certain sounds that kids can hear and adults can't hear? I wonder if it's kind of one of those deals. I don't know.
Maybe.
So I will say, we're going to get into the I Try to Tell You All segment here in a second. But I want to bring up, I'm not doing the UM recruiting tape, Juice, but what I wanted to say with that point with Mezidor, because we mentioned it the other day, and Travis Wingfield brought up the point that he's going to be 25 years old by the time he's drafted. And that's something we're going to start to see more and more with the NIL money, and where a lot of players, it's going to make more sense to stay, you know, I can make a whole lot more money with one or two extra years in college than I will under my first rookie deal in the pros. Let me get that extra year or two. And now you start getting 24, 25, 26-year-old rookies in the National Football League. Does that hurt a guy's draft status if he's, you know, could be a mid-first rounder? Or what? Like, can that knock a guy back a little bit? Because by the time they get to that second contract, as it was pointed out to us, Juice, they're going to be pushing 30.
Yeah. You want me to go first? Or you want Bo to handle it?
I'm asking you.
Well, I've got a lot of thoughts on that, Big Seth. I think
like Chad had a lot of thoughts on.
Yeah,
on
well, I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying about the guys that, you know, might want to stay in college a little bit longer.
Yeah,
and make more money. Most of us, and Bo and I, you know, we were wanting to go pro for the money, but a lot of times you want to go there because you want to for the fame a little bit.
Yeah,
you know. So what are the guys playing the game for the right reason, in my opinion? And nowadays they probably aren't, in my opinion, playing the game for the right reasons. We wanted to go pro as little kids. I wanted to, when I was watching TV and I was watching guys on there as a you know 4, 5, 6, 7 whatever year old kid, I wanted to be an NFL player. You know what I mean? And I wasn't even thinking about money at that point. I was thinking about I wanted to be on TV so these people can see me go out there and showcase what I can do, you know? So I get like older guys when they're getting drafted right now, that's not a good idea for them. Staying in college is good for college, but what's it doing for the players at that point? Like, you know what I mean? Because
how are teams viewing it, right?
Yeah, exactly right. But hopefully these guys are standing there and getting their damn degree as they're doing it. You know, that's the
can you imagine bigger he's issue there right 8 years and then they come out and they don't
come out there and yeah, still two semesters short. Yeah, I've seen that before. The UM did that back in the day, but that's a different question.
I think from the NFL looking at those guys that are coming out at 24, 25, I think we're gonna see a lot more of it just because of like the NIL money. And And look, they're getting ready to unionize it. At some point, college football is going to be unionized, much like the NFL. But and the only thing, if I had a guy that was playing, you know, in his seventh year, still playing in college football, that could play in the NFL, and I'm someone evaluating him, I don't think if you're not confident in yourself that you can play in this league, and you're going to stay in college for another 3 years, well, I don't think I really care for that. That right. Give me the guy that's 22 years old, that's a sophomore. Give me the kid. This is the kid from Miami. What's his name? The number 10.
Malachi Tony.
Malachi Tony.
Malachi Tony. That kid wants to come into the NFL next year, right? I mean, that's the kind of guy you want. You want a kid like that that says, hey, I'm so good now, I want to get in the NFL and come out right now. That's what you want to see. But the other thing is, too, and Juice, you can attest to this, you know, these guys don't practice in the NFL very much. And so if you're coming in 20, in the era that I came in, if we practiced the way they practiced, now, I could have played another 3 or 4 years. Juice, you could have played another 3 or 4 years, right?
Yep.
And so you look, you got Flacco is 40 years old and he's still playing. You got guys like Aaron Rodgers. And I know those are quarterbacks, but you got some of these guys. Look, there's guys that have been in this league, and we've had a couple of ourselves that have played 4 years. They should have been cut 4 years ago, but teams always give them a contract for 1 year, and they bounce around, and next thing you know, they're 36, 37, and they haven't played a damn game in 4 years, but they've been getting paid. So yeah. It's, there's a lot of different factors you got to look at, but give me the guy that says, hey, so look, Quinn Ewers, look at Quinn Ewers. Quinn could have got $8 million or something at Texas. He said, no, I want to go and try to play in the pros.
Next thing you know,
because that's what I want.
My lowest position. So that's
right.
There you go. All right, we're going to roll
in. You could say that he pushed this guy out of his job. So
that's a good point. We're going to roll in. I tried to tell y'all, but Chad, you had something you wanted to say. So before we get there, I want to make sure I hear that.
No, just real quick, and it's ridiculous, but I think Juice will appreciate it. Like, every time I play Blitz, I play with the Miami Dolphins, and Juice catches everything. Dan Marino obviously is on point. I think it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar that's the running back.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. And it's unstoppable. And every time I throw Juice a touchdown, I think he gets like a dollar. So, like, that is the other benefit for being a legend – like OJ McDuffie.
What do you mean you get a dollar? I mean, like,
is that OJ's NIL money?
Where's my cut? Where's my cut of that dollar?
You have your old address? Is it just?
Oh, it must be your old address. My bad. Told you get a dollar every time you catch a touchdown pass on Blitz, legitimately, I would trade my career as an attorney, which I think I've done all right, to be a character on Blitz.
I'm gonna take over as your representation, Chad. Right. I'm not gonna allow that. Okay, I'm not gonna allow you to do that. Just keep it as a character on Squid Games. All right, we're gonna roll in. We're over time, so we're gonna get into. I tried to tell y'all, OJ. There's only one way to do this segment, and that's with you kicking it off.
Well, yeah. Sorry, I missed y'all last week with my I tried to tell y'all. But all right, I tried to tell y'all, ladies and gentlemen. Miami Dolphins faithful, rise up. Today, we're not just talking about football. We're talking about the future of this franchise. Channel through the words of the notorious B.I.G. himself.
Okay.
Biggie went from the bottom to the top, and that's exactly the journey we're embarking on here in Miami. It's all a dream. You know, I really think this season can be juicy. You like that, Savant, right? Maybe not watermelon juicy, but juicier than we think. The addition of Malik Willis and some young hungry dogs can make this season more than just a dream. We're going to flip the expectations. Now that we're in the limelight, because they rhyme right, I hope that the ball guys can ball out. Now it's time to get paid, blow up the World Trade. That's Biggie, but I put a little Dolphin in there, Big Seth, as you can tell right there, right?
I'm impressed. It's louder than the bomb season. You're getting ready.
That's right. That's us right now, you guys. I mean, the past few seasons, injuries, cap hits, roster turnover, Tyreek gone, Jaylen Waddle traded, question at the quarterback position, but we know we kind of filled that up a little bit. But listen, this rebuild is our juicy moment. We're clearing the deck, stacking draft picks like Biggie stack hits, two first rounders in 2026. Look at that. See, I've been working today, y'all. I've been working, Big Seth. You know, so that's ammunition. We're not just surviving. We're about to blow up, y'all. And stay with me here. So I hope that, Half and Sully, stay far from timid. Only make moves when your heart is in it and lives in the phrase. What's that phrase, Savak? Sky's the limit. You know what it is, man. I mean, no, seriously, guys. I was looking at some Biggie stuff this weekend, man, and kind of got, motivated about some of the things that he says. And I think that's important for our team. To stay on track with all this. And like I said, no more timid half measures. We're drafting with a purpose, offensive line, corners, edge rushers, wideouts, replace our speedy guys. Devon Achane is still around, Malik. We got a lot going on here. And Biggie was the one that, I was thinking about this whole weekend while I was away. And he's got a lot of great stuff that relates to what we're talking about, man. And, you know, some people see it like, you know, the more money, more problems. Yeah, we got a lot of problems. We got big contract debt money. We got salary cap squeezes. We got tough AFC East. You know, we got a lot of issues going on, man. But, you know, I just know that we got to stay the course because we get, you know, don't be we're a team that has an opportunity with what's happening because we talked a lot about what Jimmy Johnson did earlier in his show about bringing up some young guys. And those young guys came in and they performed amazingly right away, man. So that's all I got to say, man. You know, I guess I tried to tell y'all because sky's the limit.
Look at that. OJ McDuff. I see what you did there. Louder than Bob season. And Bo caught every one of those references to Biggie Smalls. There's no doubt about it. I know he did. Bohica in the chat said, Juice, I am not calling you Big Papa. Okay. Savak, what did you try to tell us?
Oh, first of all, Juice is, I tried to tell you, that just, all it did was call to mind. You guys ever seen that Keanu Reeves movie, Hardball?
Oh, yeah.
They've got that, you know, that pitcher, and he's like, he's always dancing, and he's always got Big Papa playing in his ear. Like, yes. That was all that was running through my head that entire time. But, all right. So, I tried to tell y'all, it's actually kind of fitting that we went to me next. I tried to tell y'all, ain't nothing going to make this fan base happy. Nothing. Not a trade, not a draft pick, not a miracle falling out of the beautiful Florida sky on a Sunday afternoon. Now, this one was partially inspired by Jim in the chat last week, who, by the way, gave us, as Sam so beautifully put it, one of the greatest out of context quote of all time, which was, who shit on what, Jim? But Jim's point was simple and annoyingly accurate. No matter what move gets made, fans are going to complain. And you know what? He's right. Sam even said last week, if John Eric Sullivan had his way, he would trade all of us and go out and get a brand new fan base. And let me ask you something. Could you really blame him? You know, I used to joke that Tua could lead us to a Super Bowl, win it, confetti falling, parade rolling down the street, and folks would still be complaining that he didn't hold the trophy up high enough. A little higher, Tua. Elbow locked. That's why we can't win another one. But here's the thing. It's not our fault. So if you're a Dolphins fan in your 30s, like me, you've lived your entire adult life riding a roller coaster that never quite climbs high enough. It's been a spectrum from mediocre to straight up sorry, with occasional flash of brilliance that disappears just as fast as it showed up. It's not just the losing, though. It's the inconsistency that drives you insane. So a couple of weeks ago, I get a text, because that's what happens. Every time the Dolphins make a move, my phone starts lighting up like I'm on the fucking payroll. But I won't hear from half these dudes on my birthday, but let Miami sign a punter, and suddenly I'm breaking down film like I'm on ESPN. So my buddy Drew, Seth, you know Drew, he hits me up, and he's asking what I think about the Malik Willis signing. And I told him straight up, with that arm talent, that raw ability, I would have loved to have seen what he could have done with the weapons Tua just had. And that's when it hit me. Here comes the spiral. Why has this franchise been like this for so long? And we can't even pin it all on Greer, because this mess existed long before him. This was generational. It's inherited dysfunction. We're always missing something. Now, I know every team is missing something, but we're always missing the thing. We got an offense. Cool. Defense falls apart. We build a defense. Now the offense can't move. We have weapons. We have the wrong quarterback. We think we get a better quarterback. Now the weapons are gone. At one point, we had a kicker who wasn't just good. He was arguably the best player on the team. Think about how insane that is. We're lining up 50-plus yard field goals routinely because we can't even sniff the red zone. But I digress. Nothing short of a full-blown Super Bowl victory is going to satisfy this fan base, and I'm worried that might not even be enough. But after everything we've seen, everything we've sat through, everything we've survived, can you really blame us? And I tried to tell you.
Mr. Savak attacks the logo 3 weeks ago. Now we're going after the fans. Let's go, Savak. I see it. All right. Chad Van Horn, Bo, you can take this one off.
I'll tell you. I'll try to read his. I'm on my phone camera, so I can't even see him. So to read his lips, so I'll just take your word for it.
We get close.
I'll clap right now. Good job, Chad.
Hey. Chad, what are you trying to tell us?
I feel like me and Bo are about to fight eventually, and he'll probably win. But I'm going for his knees, so I might have it. But I try to tell y'all, after 7 weeks of fatherhood and people telling me that, you know, sleeping is the issue, that is not the issue. The issue is the mother, Gabriella, in this situation, is such a superhero. And the single parents out there, my mom raised me as a single parent, are incredibly amazing. Because I have so much assistance, including from OJ. Uncle OJ will come over and do whatever it takes to take care of this baby. But she needs a lot. So the real superheroes in the world are the people that are taking care of these babies and raising them. And raising them without help. And I don't know how that's happening because I have all the help in the world and I'm still stressed out about it. So I try to tell y'all, raising a kid I thought would be easy and it is not. but fortunately, I have incredible people around me and I have incredible respect for all the single parents out there and all the people that are raising babies on their own because it is a lot.
There it is. He's done, Bo, if you want to clap it up. So shout out. Shout out to all the single parents that getting it done. Nice, nice work, Chad. Nice work. Kim Bo Camper, what did you try?
So what am I saying? What am I answering to? I tried to tell you that.
Yep. I tried to tell y'all.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to Savant there, and you bring up the I think at two different seasons we've had the kicker could have been the MVP for the team. This is not going to make you feel happy because right now we have two kickers, two punters, two long snappers on. So we've got six people in the kicking game on our roster right now. So that's going to be a big battle during training camp. And you can keep an eye on. You're going to keep an eye on that one. We'll put you in charge of keeping an eye on that. And hopefully the competition. So this is what I'm saying. I told you
that'll
that
work.
Mike McDaniels is going to be a soft coach, and this team is not going to play well, and you're not going to win many games until you belly up and play big man football. And we've heard it from his former players. We've heard it from it's been streaming out ever since he got fired. And so I told you that early on, and I'm going to tell you this, it's going to be a completely different thing here with Jeff Hafley and with Sully coming in because they come from that black and blue division. They're playing the Bears. They're playing the Vikings. They're playing Detroit. And you can't win in that division unless you play big man football and tough guy football. And I think they're going to come down and do this. And I think I'm going to say in 2 years from now, we're going to be a team that you know, I'm with you, Savant. The fans are they're tough around here. I always said, our fans, they'll if you're winning, they'll jump on that bus, that big bus or a truck on 95, and they'll be on that bandwagon. But the one thing they do, they never put their seatbelts on because once you start losing, they're going to jump off as soon as they can, and jump off that. But I think we're going to have them in 2 or 3 years. We're going to have those guys strapped in and locked in the whole time because I really think this is the group that's going to do the right thing. You still see what they're doing right now. I think they've got a plan, and they don't have a 1 year plan. They don't have a 6 month plan. They got a 5 year plan. I believe that's going to make changes and give you some long term stability. And so 5 years from now, if I'm still alive, you can bring me on the phone on this the show again. And I'll be able to tell you, I told you that. So that's my deal for tonight.
Yes, sir.
Well, you better still be alive in 5 years, Bo.
You number better. One,
okay. That's the first thing here.
I don't know. I'm running on about three tires right now, sir.
The second thing is that we tried to tell people, Juice, but Bo was just like, I told you.
I told you. And certain guys can get away with that, Big Seth. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? I'm trying to tell you, as a parent or whatever, but the real parents, like, I told you not to take your ass outside, Big Seth.
Killer bees.
In the rain, after dark.
Do not mess with killer bees. Sam Arcu in the house. He just told us to start over.
Oh, man, Juice, that tone just took me right back to my childhood.
Welcome, Sam. We're glad we missed you here. So at Funyuns are a chip. See, this is what we've been missing for everybody who wasn't in the chat. Sam, welcome. Well, gentlemen, I tried to tell y'all to keep Tua away from a microphone. I know that he's no longer a member of the Miami Dolphins, and the most polarizing athlete in South Florida history has somehow divided the fan base once again over just how much we should or shouldn't be paying attention to him. But the extremely recently turned former Finns quarterback, his first public media availability since becoming the former Finns quarterback, simply cannot be ignored as much as I wish that I could do so. And while I will give Tua and anyone conducting an interview over Zoom some grace, the lefty never seems to be able to find the right thing to say. Man. Our friend Dave Hyde wrote in his column today that Tua led the league in interceptions and improper messaging last season. Believe it or not, Dave's fabulous line might be a fabulous understatement, because Tua's verbal faux pas weren't limited to last season either. From telling us about our chip-eating couch-sitting habits, and yes, I might have felt a little targeted there, easy clicker use, to his infamous Rod Tidwell impersonation, Bo's favorite, to asshole ex-coaches, to scheduling games in Israel, to ruining O.J. McDuffie's Christmas.
Yes.
Tua's masterclass of microphone madness dwarfs his career completion percentage, his passer rating, or his touchdown totals. A starting quarterback is the most forward-facing individual in a National Football League franchise other than the head coach. So the number of reps in a season are seemingly endless, which means the odds are you might put your foot in your mouth at some point. That's not unfathomable. But when it becomes the rule rather than the exception, when the answers become increasingly awkward, when the once beloved nice guy comes across as aloof and disinterested, and when the face of a franchise finds a way to disprove Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hour rule, well, let's just say the situation becomes unique in many ways. Believe it or not, I'm rooting for Tua in his fresh start. I hope he has a better season than what he gave us in 2025. And actually, I believe that he will. What I'm not so sure about is that he will improve his podium performance. Keep Tua away from the damn mic, folks. I tried to tell y'all.
Yes, yes. I love that, Big Seth. You know, but I was telling Bo before you got on that I can't wait for his mic performance in Atlanta. So I don't want him away from the microphone, Big Seth. I want to see how the Atlanta shit goes.
Oh, God.
Thank you.
I'm just glad that Bo can't hear me, because I'm going to talk some more shit.
Well, that, so Sam's here. I got to share this with Sam because he'll have a whole act on it. So another reason, Sam, Kim Boepcamper can hear everyone but Chad Van Horn. So we're speculating that he actually can't hear Chad, but he's just giving him the silent treatment. So we don't know. So,
no. It's so good. I mean, his wings are shit, but he's a nice guy.
You know, his
wings are absolute shit.
How adept I am, Seth. So if I can't figure it out, who's going to figure it out, right?
That's a great point. That's a great point. So look, we have to, now that Sam is here, if anybody has any questions, drop them in the chat. I know we're running a little bit late, but we've got the Chad Van Horn Legal Zone. So if you've got a legal question, we can take one or two. While we're waiting for those questions, I will have to say our new show with OJ Savak and myself, Finn Condition, we've got two episodes out. So please go follow Finn Condition on Apple or Spotify. You can also go to the Fish Tank YouTube channel and watch it. There's two episodes out. We focused on the 1984 Topps Dan Marino rookie. And then most recently, just today, we dropped an episode about the worst fit in NFL trading card history. It's OJ McDuffie's 1993 Upper Deck rookie card and his air slops. Check out Finn Condition. They're relatively quick episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. All right.
So, hey, Big Seth, the buildup was incredible, and I knew exactly what you're going to say. And I was like, what, you built that up to OJ McDuffie's air slops?
If you don't know what we're talking about, you got to go watch it. OJ does a great job. It's really cool because, like, we all, you know, for those of us who collect the trading cards, there's certain cards that stand out to us. But to find out what happened on the photo shoot, to find out the look on a guy's face when he first got an opportunity to see his card, his first ever NFL card, just wonderful stuff.
Hey, Big Seth, real quick, too, man. I had some people reach out to me and say, oh, my God, that was my favorite card of you.
And did any of them admit to sending you one?
No, I sent them back.
And were they females or males?
As he takes males. A sip.
They were males.
As they he were takes males, a sip.
98% of my fandom is young men or boys or men.
Men. Okay. All right, chill out.
Come on, let's go.
Here's a legal question. We got one from Bohica. Is it legal to hit the neighbor's screaming kids with pepper balls?
So how old are the kids and how dangerous are the pepper balls? I would say if they're screaming like late at night and they're 13 or older, and the pepper balls aren't going to have like permanent damage, you're pretty much safe there.
No, you're not, Ted. You are not safe there. Don't listen to that.
That is not true.
Don't
was that. Bad Van Horn, not Chad Van Horn. Okay.
That must be the vine.
Yeah. So, Chad, here's another one from Andrew Crow. Is it legal for a company to ask for you to pay PTO time back after you have left the company? That's a good question.
Yeah, that is actually a fantastic company, and it really is based on what state you're in. In the great state of Florida, we are very company corporation heavy. So the short answer is yes. In the great state of Florida, the company can ask you to pay that PTO back. If you have an employment contract, it always comes down to the contract, but in general, the default language in Florida is in the company's favor.
If that's the case in Florida, and we also have our attorney general suing the National Football League for violating DEI policies, can the Dolphins try to claw back some of that money they owe to a Tua Tagovailoa?
So if they hire me, 100%. And I've met Tua, super nice guy. I'm sure. We could definitely have a good lawsuit for fraud.
Okay.
Oh. Damn. Another joke from Chad Van Horn.
Fired. Okay.
It's not a legal question.
So here's a question. I wish Bo could hear the answer. We'll have to tell him. So, of course, from Sam Marcoux, we had to get one in here. Bo, you're going to like this. Is it legal for Kim Bocamper to get at least one backhanded slap in for free if he sees Mike McDaniel in the streets? Can you give Mike McDaniel in the streets a backhand slap?
So the short answer is yes, because it's self defense. Legal? Yeah. It's self defense because obviously Mike McDaniel has been attacking him for all of these years, so he has the right to defend himself. Please send the message to my good friend Kim.
So Bo, Chad says that it is legal because it's self defense that Mike McDaniel's been attacking you with his coaching style. Apparently, is what he says.
I appreciate speaking that.
Self defense, did anybody see? I don't know how to pronounce his last name. The guy who plays Reacher on not Tom Cruise, but yes. The guy who plays
Alan Richardson.
Alan Richardson?
Yep. Alan Richardson.
Oh, no.
It's not spelled like. Well, whatever. Riding the motorcycles, and then the guy comes across the street, the neighbor, and stands in there. And did you guys see that? And gets
involved? Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Probably not the guy.
That's a bad mistake in judgment right there.
Right. Yeah.
He should have stopped the little kids. Not the dad.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I think the only thing that would have pissed him off more is if he had done that to his kids. But you and Pat, even though you can't hear each other, you're lockstep because you both agree that that was a bad decision to make.
Yeah.
It is 10:20. We've gone way over time.
But oh, man.
I know. We're having so much fun.
I'm sorry to have to do that and end it. For some reason, we start to pick up, like, in the chat here later, the later we get. It's been great. We look forward to seeing everybody again Wednesday. Kim Bocamper, we're grateful that you joined
Thanks, Bo.
And we'll invite Chad back to the Legacy Luncheon Series so you guys can hear each other.
I just love that Kim would shut the hell up and listen to me for once.
Too funny. And check out Kim Condition.
He knows. Yeah, okay.
Check out Kim Condition. Juice, get us the hell out of here before the rails that we go off the
rails. Hey, everybody. Really, really, thanks for diving in.
All right.
Who that? sitting down with Seth Living, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dog fans, number one. One, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank, go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank, it's only legendary talking when you